L'Invité de Clark with your host, Clark Ady. Enjoy interesting interviews in English with fascinating people from our area and beyond. Another reason why things always go better with a little harmony in your life.
L'Invité de Clark, c'est mercredi à 10h15 et samedi à 18h15.
Welcome back to L'Invité de Clark for part two of my interview with Kieran Kelly. Here in his home, his beautiful home in the Finisterre. We talked a lot last week about his origins and places that he'd been, and that was fascinating. And now we'd like to talk some more about what he's done since he's been here for 33 years. It's a lot of different things. Kieran, welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
We talked a little bit about what he had done after he got here, but I'd like to get into that more because I know one of the things you did was some teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, you know, before I came, when I was in Ireland, 18 years as a civil servant, you know. And so when I came here, that particular skill, if you can put it that way, wasn't much in demand.
At least, no, probably not.
So I got involved in the beginning in teaching English in companies in France. It was a school, a private school in Brest, in fact, but it was basically teaching in companies in Brest there.
Uh-huh.
And I found I liked teaching, but I developed it more into teaching it, I thought, in third level education, and then I finished up teaching in secondary schools, which I preferred. Actually, I found I liked teaching, but I preferred teaching the secondary schools. I felt I was more useful there teaching rather than teaching in companies, you know. But even though, you know, but yeah, teaching in secondary schools is very particular, the young people.
And age what, 11, 12, 13?
Yeah, from CZM.
CZM.
First year from college up to terminal. Yeah, so. And obviously the entrance, you know, the CZM and 5e and the end, what they call premier terminal, I always found that more interesting. In the middle, when kids are that age group, 13, 14, 15, you need special skills, I think, personality skills and personal skills. And I wasn't always sure that I had those, you know. So,
yeah.
But, no, I've had very, very pleasant experience of teaching in secondary schools, I must admit. Yeah.
When you came over, did you have any French?
Very little.
Yeah.
I mean, I studied French like most Irish people, and perhaps most American people as well. We had, in secondary school only, for 5 years. The last 5 years of secondary school, and we had a choice, you know. The classes every year was divided into ABC, so there was one ABC, two ABC, etc. And I was in the A class for some reason. The A classes were the better students,
the brighter students.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, for some strange reason, I found myself, I would have been much happier, I think, in the B.
Yes,
I'll tell you why, because the foreign languages, the possibilities were French, German, or Spanish.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a choice. You didn't have a choice. If you were A, you did French.
Is that right?
If you were B, you did German. And if you were C, you did Spanish. It was totally
very
ludicrous. But anyway,
yeah,
it was a way of organizing things.
That was in Dublin.
In Dublin, yeah. And I have to admit, my memories of learning French are practically all negative from the school.
From the school,
except
that
one particular point in time, a French woman came for a couple of months, and we were all very interested in French. She was a young French woman. You know, we were all very interested in French.
It peaked.
Peaked and declined once, because in fact it was a Christian brother who did it, and like,
yeah,
you know, basically if you didn't perform well in French, you know, he got pretty angry, you know. So far, all that to explain that when I came to France, I had some French. I never said ça va, for example. I said comment allez-vous.
That's what you learn in school.
Yeah, that's what you learn in school. So, well, you know, people are saying ça va, ça gaz.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah, it's true.
Well, this guy knows French. Comment allez-vous? He knows. But in fact, what I did was, the only newspaper I'd ever heard of in Ireland was the Le Monde. So I used to buy Le Monde in the morning, mm-hmm, get a dictionary out, work on the main national article, the main international article, and I then watched the television in the evening, and invariably those two stories came up.
Yes.
So I started off and I understood a bit, maybe less than 10% of what was going on.
Certainly. Probably, sure. Yeah, they speak fast.
And it took about 3 or 4 months, and then I just remembered one night I was watching, and I suddenly, understood about 75% of what was going on, because there were expressions that I was reading in the articles, there were vocabulary, I was checking it out, and you know, because the same, normally the national story, if it's not just one night, it'll run over several nights and maybe several weeks. And
sure, yeah.
And things just sort of went in. And then, bingo, you know, just like that. One day. So that worked for me. So, and once I got that, and then I began to speak with a bit of confidence. And
speaking is the thing, isn't
it? Yeah, I began to speak. And afterwards, your doors open, you know, and you're with the neighbours.
Oh, it makes such a difference.
It makes a huge difference.
Such a difference to be able to talk to people. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, and not a lot of English people who speak very good French, but I know also people from nationalities who've never really bothered.
You see that a lot.
I always find that sad because...
Yeah, embarrassing, actually.
Hmm?
It's a little bit embarrassing for people who actually live here.
Hmm. But there you go. So it was... well, once I got to that stage, then French became a pleasure.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you understand they have a great sense of humor. You understand all the things you wouldn't understand otherwise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I still have problems with French humor. I don't get me wrong, but it's just that they have different ways of jeu de mots.
Yes.
Than in English, and I still find it hard. Sometimes you have to have a lot of cultural background to understand them.
Yeah, you got to make sure you understand what they're really saying.
So occasionally I can be a bit lost. But
We'd say in the States, you'd be out in left field.
Hmm?
You'd be out in left field, we'd say in the States.
Yeah.
Because we have so many baseball references, you know.
Ah, okay.
So I'm sure the same thing in French. You know, one of the things I always admired about Kieran, and which brought us together a little bit, was singing. And... Kieran used to put on, maybe you still do, some shows from time to time, Irish in theme.
Well, no. I'm still involved musically, right? So I'm a singer. I mean, when other guys were playing football and whatever, as a young fellow, I was just learning songs. I mean, that's just what I did, basically. You know?
Great.
And I still continue learning songs, really. And so I sing with a group called Patchwork, which we're based up around... Plougastel abreast there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I sing with them, and then there are five of us in the group, so it's all, obviously, it's Irish music, Irish song, and traditional music and that too. And the thing you're referring to is that show, which I did five or six times, but which became a bit difficult to do in the end, and we stopped. It was around the centenary of 1916.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So I built a program around that, to telling the story of Ireland from basically the time of the arrival of the Celts until independence in 1922, that period there.
Yeah.
Because what's interesting about Irish history is songs, there was a song for every single event, you know, and songs were seen as a form of resistance, in fact.
I see,
So, you know, people wrote songs to remember people, martyrs in the past.
The Foggy Dew,
The Foggy Dew was written in a great song.
Great song.
Written in 1919, after 1963, 1916, and which told the story of that week in 1916,
mm-hmm.
When this group of, very small group of people, took over the General Post Office.
Yes.
And, okay, they lost that particular battle, because after a week they were...
outmanned.
But we won the War of Independence 3 years later, 3 or 4 years later. So, that is a great song. And actually, funny enough, I can't remember the name of this singer. She was a black civil rights activist in the 1960s.
Really?
Who recorded it on one of her albums.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a song that had reverberations everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's inspired music.
But that was a great that particular show was good. You know, that we had songs and
dancing,
dancing,
Irish dancing.
That's right, dancing, and we had a storyteller who kind of told the story. And as we developed it, in fact, we added in a little bit of theatre. He dressed up as a character like Daniel Connell and told the story with Daniel Connell and etc. But I would have liked to develop it, but it was very complicated getting people together.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Getting people together and getting rooms to do it in.
No, it's true. It's an organization.
Yeah.
I'm interviewing Kieran Kelly. We've been talking about some of his musical talents and things he's done in the past. Yeah, the Patchwork, the group, do they perform regularly?
Well, not regularly enough. No, we were doing. Well, I tell you, we're doing with a couple of friends. It's Patchwork and Friends tomorrow night, the 16th in Llandyfynnych, St. Patrick's Day.
Sure enough.
So if you're free and you're doing nothing tomorrow evening, you know.
Well, you hear that? Yeah. Oh, it's already too late for you, but damn it.
Not for you, you know.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Are they Irish guys or are they locals?
Well, there's a mixture of, there's two Irish people in the group and the rest are Bretons or even, you know.
Yeah. And you're not playing an instrument, right?
No.
Yeah, well, that's a job. That's a good one. Hmm. Well, okay, so we'll keep your eyes and ears open for Patchwork. And maybe they're on the internet, are they? You have a little schedule or something?
Yeah, we have a site on Facebook.
Okay, good enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one other thing I'd like to talk about before we go today is the adoption of your kids. Mm. I think it's a fascinating story.
Mm.
He has two lovely daughters with Hildegard, who were adopted from Vietnam. And I don't know the origin of how that happened. Maybe you can tell us how all that transpired, that you ended up... Well, first of all, Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and I know you go there periodically too.
Well, we haven't been there for a while. No, we did go several times after the adoptions too, because we were conscious of the fact that most adopted children end up at a stage in their lives when they want to find out what the past. So we decided that we preferred that they should know that from the start, and that there's not this searching thing. In fact, they go back. They've been back on their own with their partners, and one of my daughters has gone back this year again with her two children and her husband. So they've been back. We went I think four times in total, but it's quite a long time since we've been there now, you know. But why Vietnam? Because Vietnam was why adoption first of all. Well, because
it was a choice.
Yeah, it was a choice, and why Vietnam? Well, because when we looked at the countries where it was available, it wasn't possible in France, in fact, right?
Yeah.
So we looked at the countries.
Oh.
Vietnam came up as one of the options that were, or at least there were very few children for adoption in France.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That's the case.
Yeah.
So, and Vietnam was one where there was, you know, it was possible at that time, you know?
Sure.
And so we went for it, you know, but it's quite a long process, you know, because you have, for me, adoption was quite normal. I'll tell you why, because as growing up as a young fellow in Finglas in Dublin, we had neighbours with whom we were very friendly, and they had two daughters who were adopted.
Oh.
Okay, and they were part of the kids, and they were, so, you know, adopted or
normal.
It was totally
normal,
totally normal, didn't, you know, so it just sort of, I never had a problem with it.
Sure. That's what that means. No, it was a good thing.
And so, yeah, it's a long process because you go through the psychological, you go through psychologists,
to know who you are.
Social workers, and it lasts over 10 or 11 months, if I can't remember, and then there's a jury that decides whether you're fit to adopt or not, you know. And then once you have that paper, you go out. So both girls were... we adopted one, she was 3 years old. The first girl was 3 years old, and the second was 8 when we adopted her.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They weren't adopted babies. They were both in.
Was it about foster care? Foster care? Or orphanage?
Orphanages, in orphanages, yeah.
Is it possible to trace the background of their parents?
We did. We did. We even went back in one case, we went actually back to the village, and the second adoption, the 8-year-old girl, back to her. Village from where she came, which was actually an extraordinary experience, because this village, my memory is, was in the middle of the paddy fields, a small village in the middle of the paddy fields,
and right.
We got out, we had the translator, because we didn't speak Vietnamese, obviously, we had a translator with us, and we walked across these, like, dikes, you call them, between the paddy fields, right?
Separating the fields,
And you could see here and there, you could see gravestones. Little graves, you know.
Oh.
This is because they buried their grandparents and
the farm,
right? And we arrived at the outskirts of the village, and people looked out, and they said, Leanne, Kim Leanne, that's their daughter's name, right?
Yeah.
And they started following us, you know. And by the time we arrived, in fact, we went to our grandfather's house, and by the time we got there, the whole village was there, yeah.
Wow.
It was. I keep a very, very good memory of that.
It's been a very moving thing for her.
Yeah, for her, for you know, her grandfather, I think, because they were, you know, she had family, you know.
Yeah.
But her parents were dead. Right, yeah. And she goes back, and she's been back, and she keeps in contact and that kind of.
I suppose the orphanage was probably in a city, wouldn't be anywhere near where she came from.
Hmm?
The orphanage, where she went.
I can't remember exactly. No, it was in the town, but it wasn't that far away.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't in Hanoi, it was in a town.
Yeah.
There were two different orphanages, it wasn't the same orphanage.
Okay.
Yeah.
What a story that is. Well, they're lovely people. I had a chance to meet, and they're very successful, and, you know, congratulations. And thank you. But it's taken them out of a situation that maybe was most difficult as an orphan, can you imagine? Well, it's that time again, Kieran. We've rambled on a bit, as I was hoping we would. And you've got a very interesting story, and I'm delighted that we have a chance to put this on the radio and maybe get some people out to see you as a group on Facebook. Patchwork,
yeah. Patchwork Irish Music.
Yeah.
I want to put in Patchwork Irish Music, Brest, because we discovered once we put Patch, you know, that there's different groups. There's a group in England called Patchwork. There's a group called Patchwork. Patchwork is a very popular name.
Ah, but they don't stand a chance compared to you, my friend.
Well, not a chance.
Well, this is the end of our part two, and if you can listen to both on RadioHarmony.com on the archive section. So thanks again, Kieran, for your hospitality and for the chance to go over your history.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, okay.
Okay, all the best.
Speak to you again soon. Huh?
Shalom.
Shalom the fall.
Oh, that too. Bye-bye.
L'invité de Clark, with your host, Clark Ady. Enjoy interesting interviews in English with fascinating people from our area and beyond. Another reason why things always go better with a little harmony in your life.
L'invité de Clark, c'est mercredi à 10h15 et samedi à 18h15.